It's 8:06 on this Thursday, September 15th. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Good morning. 45 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, nice cool start to your Thursday. We're seeing quite a bit of sunshine. We had a little bit of fog settled in some of the lower valleys along Wasatch Back, but for the most part, pretty quiet as you kick off the day. You're heading to about 66 this afternoon. We do have more showers and thunderstorms in the mix. Fairly scattered in nature throughout the afternoon. Best chances, I think, for Park City are going to be later this evening into the early overnight hours. Could see some heavy rains push through with showers overnight. 45 or so tomorrow morning, Friday. 63. Moisture is going to hang on to northern Utah through Saturday. So more showers and thunderstorms expected Friday into Saturday as well. They'll be a little more scattered or a little more isolated, in nature as we get into Saturday, as there'll be less moisture at play. Into Sunday, southwest flow increases, should see drier conditions, sunny skies, a little warmer temperatures, about 71 on Sunday. Winds are going to be a little breezy over the weekend, should see highs of 73 on Monday, continued sunshine. That warm-up is ahead of another system that should push more moisture into Park City Tuesday and Wednesday. So we're going to increase our chances of moisture again on Tuesday afternoon. Showers and thunderstorms are possible. Highs near 67 and just 60 for the high. Should be quite a bit cooler into Wednesday. Models are hinting at some cold enough temperatures to maybe see a little bit of snow at the higher peaks in our mountain areas by middle of next week.
Wow. Okay. Thanks.
There you go.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Roger Armstrong. We'll be taking a look at some of the issues discussed during yesterday's meeting. Then the founder and CEO of Ski Butlers, or I should say former, Bryn Carey. He'll be talking about his decision to sell that successful business to Alterra Mountain Company. Later on, Executive Director of Christian Center of Park City, Rob Harder, giving us an update on this weekend's Hike for Hunger. Also, stay tuned. Coming up on Cool Science Radio right after the Local News Hour, today's guests include Russell Foster. He's written the book Lifetime, Your Body Clock and Its Essential Roles in Good Health and Sleep, a guide to using the science of the body clock to promote better sleep, better health, and better thinking. Then National Geographic explorers Steve Winter and Sharon Guineup talk about their new book, The Ultimate Book of Big Cats, Your Guide to the Secret Lives of These Fierce, Fabulous Felines. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio. And of course, you can hear Cool Science Radio every Thursday between 9 and 10. It's 8:09. Good morning. Taking a look at some local news now as neighbors and motorists near the Mayflower Mountain Resort see how the ski trail and construction is progressing. Some wonder how much snow it will actually have once the resort is up and running. KPCW's Ben Lass has more about that.
With a target opening date of 2024, construction is well underway at the country's first new ski resort in decades. Apartments are nearing move-in status, home lots are selling, and hotel and skier amenities are on track to open before the slopes, according to Extel Utah, the Mayflower Mountain Resort developer. Extel Utah Vice President of Development Kirk Krieg said Tuesday that crews have cleared about 300 acres of ski runs so far. The resort plans to offer 4,000 acres of total skiable area. As builders make progress, locals have expressed concerns. Sue Ellen Weiniger, a Utah-born Midway resident, is a half-hour drive from the resort. She said she's open to buying a Mayflower season pass one day, but she's skeptical about conditions.
You drive by all winter long, and there's just not a lot of snow there ever. So that's concerning. We can always hope it's going to be good, but anyway, we just are very skeptical and very concerned about the water.
According to Extel Assistant Vice President of Development Brooke Hauntz, Mayflower will have good snow through winter. She attributed that to data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration that reflect a special weather pattern over the resort. She said over the last 20 years, temperatures recorded at Mayflower were slightly colder than at nearby resorts like Deer Valley, even though that resort's base area elevation is 500 feet higher. In addition, she said Mayflower will use top-of-the-line snowmaking equipment.
Over the past 20 years, it's actually a little bit cooler over here on the Mayflower side, which helps us. Cooler is obviously better for when you want to make snow or even when snow, you know, wants to fall naturally. The data also shows that the temperatures are colder here longer.
But climate change experts say ski resorts in the western U.S. will soon face new challenges, and past data won't be the best predictor of the future. Former National Weather Service senior hydrologist Brian McInerney said 10 to 40 years from now, most research shows the current average snowpack will drop to just half of what it is now.
We're seeing that right now. Winter is starting later. It's ending earlier. We're getting rain in November, where we used to get snow frequently. Now we're seeing an increase in the amount of rainfall and also in the spring.
He said long-term weather changes are happening across the western United States. Some specific impacts of climate change include more high-pressure weather. McInerney said that causes long periods of warm, dry conditions at times when snowfall used to be more consistent. That can make snowmaking more crucial, especially in early season months. Mayflower will draw water from the Jordanelle Reservoir, located just below the resort. Extel owns rights to use 900 acre-feet of that per year for snowmaking. That's 1/3 of 1% of the total capacity of the Jordanelle. Hunt said Extel bought the majority of those water rights with the land for the project. The Mayflower will be about 20% larger than Park City Mountain, not including the canyon side, according to Park City Mountain spokesperson Sarah Huey. According to Krieg and Park City Public Utilities Director Clint McAfee, the Mayflower expects to use 40% more water than Park City Mountain uses on its slopes. Meanwhile, Mayflower will be twice the size of Deer Valley, its next-door neighbor, but will only have about 25% more water rights, according to Deer Valley spokesperson Emily Summers. McInerney said with or without water and snow machines, the increasingly warmer temperatures will force Utah ski resorts to make unprecedented decisions sooner rather than later. That especially applies to Mayflower, which is at 6,500 feet of elevation at the base area.
So if you are starting a new skier and your base elevation is anywhere around the 7,000 mark, 7,7500, it's going to be problematic to have snow at your base area trying to get any kind of a base area set up for, you know, the Christmas holiday. It's becoming more and more problematic as we speak, and it's only going to get worse until roughly about, 2070, 2080, the ski industry is going to have to do something different because we won't have snow. It just won't work that way.
Within 60 to 80 years, he said meteorologists predict Park City weather will shift to become about 10 degrees Fahrenheit warmer. He said that'll change Wasatch back weather to feel like Salt Lake City year-round. Last year, Park City Mountain delayed its opening from November 19th to November 28th. When it opened, it used a gondola to shuttle visitors to high elevation areas because the base area was too dry. Solitude also pushed back last season's opening date. Hans acknowledged the Mayflower base area doesn't get as much natural snow accumulation as resorts in the Cottonwood Canyons because it's east-facing and exposed to direct sun much of the day. She also added that most of the resort's runs will face north and largely avoid direct sunlight. But according to Hans, the Mayflower is bringing in the most sophisticated snowmaking equipment in North America. That's part of why the resort says it'll offer a ski experience that will meet or exceed what is currently provided at any other resort in Utah. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Coming up now at 8:15, good morning. Well, forecasting weather more than 5 days in advance is tricky, but winter predictions so far indicate a big snowfall coming to the Pacific Northwest. But it's uncertain snowfall for the Wasatch Back due to La Nina. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more.
Meteorologist Sam Collentine talked with KPCW about the Weather and Snow Prediction Service Open Snow. He said it uses past data and looks at existing storm details to predict where skiers and snowboarders can find the deepest powder.
So we have forecasts throughout the West, local forecasters that write daily snows every day throughout the winter, but we also have the latest snow reports, webcams, 5 to 10 day snow forecasts. So really everything you need as a skier, snowboarder, and especially a powder chaser throughout the West.
Collentine said Pacific Ocean surface temperatures are cooler than average, which signals a La Nina phase. He said it would be the third La Nina in a row, and surface temperatures have stayed cold throughout the summer.
It gives us kind of a confident signal that we're at least going to have a somewhat strong winter throughout the western United States. Like, these are looking out months in advance, but when we look back at previous winters, it's a pretty decent signal for especially the Pacific Northwest, western Canada. Gets a little bit weaker of a signal when we get down to the central Rockies.
Collentine said there is no correlation between how warm it has been in northern Utah this summer and how warm it will be this winter. Predicting snowfall this far out is imprecise, but meteorologists use past data to help forecast weather beyond 10 days out.
When there's been this strong of La Nina in the summer months, six out of those seven winters since 1950, it's correlated to a very strong La Nina. And like I said, it's mixed signals for a place like Utah.
National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, temperature forecasts this winter will be warmer than average, especially in the desert southwest. He said NOAA uses the past 30 years when comparing average temperatures.
Northern Utah is kind of like equal chances of not really below or above average. With climate change happening, we are seeing warmer temperatures. And so when you look at even the past 10 or 15 years, you're really seeing a ramp up in the essentially the amount of record temperatures and warmer temperatures during the winter months throughout much of the West. And so that really throws a wrench in those 30-year climate average.
Colantine said the La Nina conditions make it impossible to predict precipitation in northern Utah because the weather can go either way based on historical models.
Utah is right in that equal chances area. Not really above, not really below. And when we look back at those previous La Nina winters, there's been a couple of those strong La Nina winters where Utah's been, you know, 10 to 30% above average. There's been some that they're right at average and some that they're right below average. So again, there really isn't a clear signal for Utah.
Colantine said, who knows when trying to predict weather farther than 5 to 10 days out. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:18. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday, and in the studio with a recap, I have Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the news that the big white tent may not be coming down out of the Ecker Hill Park and Ride anytime soon. Apparently a grant didn't come through, or can you tell us what happened?
No, I don't think it was a grant. We thought we had an alternative place to do maintenance on the buses, and we were well into negotiations for that piece of property, and it came apart as a result of a dispute between that property owner and an existing renter on the property. So what looked to be available suddenly vanished, and then trying to get there may be a financial piece. I think we were going to try and put in some road base on the Gilmore property where the maintenance facility and the admin offices are going to be ultimately, but that's not going to work for this winter. So unfortunately, we're going to have to stay where we are.
Okay, through the winter, that's the plan.
It appears so.
Okay, let's see. Today is the final day for people to appeal their property tax valuations to the Board of Equalization, which is essentially the Summit County Council. There was a meeting last night billed as an opportunity for people to have some say in that. I guess you were at the county council, so probably didn't attend that?
I did not, no. Yeah. We had a council meeting last night, and then we followed that with the North Summit Fire meeting. So.
Okay. Well, basically, I mean, what people, some are claiming it's taxation without representation, that the taxes are unconstitutional. I mean, where do things stand here?
Things stand with the taxes are going to stay where they are. Today is the last day, and I would encourage people, if you believe that your individual property has been assessed inaccurately, file a claim with the Board of Equalization. You'll be able to have conversations with the county assessor, provide evidence that supports that discrimination or disparity in valuation. That's how it works for individual parcels. As it works for the entire taxing system, Utah is regulated at the state law level. I asked again the county attorney to give us some guidance because I'm getting emails from people that I respect a lot that are actually very smart, some former lawyers saying, please invalidate the tax assessment, and we can't do that. We don't have a means of doing that. And I'll read from a note that I got from the county attorney's office. Neither the county council nor the Board of Equalization have statutory authority to reject the assessment roll. The Board of Equalization has a statutory authority to change the assessment roll upon evidence of error in the assessment of specific properties. The Tax Commission did not issue a corrective action, which is what we're being asked to do. We've got a couple of, there are two, there's a couple that owns at least one property. that started this inquiry, and based on their inquiry and asking us to look into the taxing process, we enlisted the assistance of Josh Nielsen at the Utah State Tax Commission. We went to the county assessor. We've had public meetings about it. We had Josh Nielsen come before us last week to provide us an opinion. This particular couple has had the opportunity to talk directly to Josh at the Tax Commission. He has sent them emails. Stephanie Pohl, the county assessor, has interacted with them, and I understand that that may be where some of this drive is coming from. But at this point, they're asking us to take corrective action. That's for the Tax Commission to take, and they take that if they believe that there's a problem with the assessment. Josh Nielsen has said to us in two emails, and under questioning from me last week, I said, I asked Josh very specifically, in your opinion, according to the email you sent to us, the county council, the county assessor, the assessments that were done were in compliance with state law. Is that correct? His response was yes, the 2020 assessment is compliant. There's something called the sales tax ratio, 5% of residential properties have to be within a 5% range in that sales tax ratio. Commercial properties and non-residential have to be within 10%. I said the 5 and 10% sales tax ratio, the assessments fall within that legal range, is that correct? And he said, yes. I said, is it your opinion that we do not currently have data to make adjustments to valuations? Josh said, I don't feel we currently have the data to adjust or make adjustments to properties that, in people's opinion, are not fair and equitable. This is a legally, legally compliant assessment that's fair and equitable under state law and the Constitution. Is that what I'm hearing? And his response was yes. So again, after that meeting, there's been continual correspondence with Josh. There's an allegation that has been made that 10,000 properties are unassessed. The county assessor has responded to that, saying that over half of those mentioned properties are not subject to reassessment. They're owned by nonprofits, they're exempt timeshares, priv tax properties, a few that are state assessed, open space parcels, and the largest chunk, Highland Range parcels. There are also 4,900 parcels that will get that very specific assessment next year. So the way we do taxes in the state of Utah is assessors are required to do this sort of individual property look at a more detailed level at least once every 5 years. And then, so over time, there will be periods of time within those 20%. I got a detailed assessment, I think, in the last year or two. I had a pretty good jump in property taxes. My jump this year it's another increase, but it's less. So for four of those 5 years, there may be an imbalance of properties because not everybody is getting that specific assessment. They're part of the overall mass assessment that's done on the rest of the properties.
Well, and I guess, again, according to the founders of the PCTaxJustice.org website, your increased property tax payment now being offset by another person's decreased payment.
That would be an opinion. And it probably is. And I think Josh admitted to that. He said under the Utah state tax system, there will be periods of time when that 20% that have a detailed assessment might be paying more than the rest that are getting a mass tax assessment because it's not capturing the nuances of those raises. But that's the way the law is constructed in the state of Utah. And we don't get to go outside that and say, okay, we think that because this is an unprecedented market rise year, that we should do it differently. That's not permitted.
Yeah. It just sounds like, though, I mean, for that to happen as we see maybe real estate prices softening. So, I mean, does that all then have to be done again next year? Is that fair if it's not?
It has to be done every year. We've got rises and falls in prices. I'm looking at my tax bill. Josh Nielsen said that there are a couple of reasons for you know, and this is not Summit County alone, by the way. This is impacting everybody throughout the state of Utah. Dramatic rise in property values, unprecedented. That's one issue. The second issue is that statewide commercial properties have increased in value from 10 to 15%, but the increase in value of non-commercial properties has gone up 45%. That shifts the burden, that lower rise in commercial shifts the burden to residential properties. And he said that that's one. The state school board froze for a five-year period the state basic school levy. That freeze came off this year. So as I look at my tax bill, the single biggest increase on my tax bill is that state school levy. So we're all getting that. The school district has a raise, and Weber Basin Water had a raise of 62%. Those are, the county, if you look at your tax bill, it should say zero all the way down for Park City, Summit County, and Park City Fire in my case. Weber Basin had an increase. Local assessing and collecting is zero. The charter school levy is zero. Mosquito abatement is zero. We lowered the tax rate in Summit County as we were required to do because of that rise in value. So for those who are calling for the Summit County Council to invalidate this assessment, it's illegal for us to do it. There's no basis for us to do it. And it's not something that we're going to do or that we can do.
Okay, let's get to some of the other topics. You heard about the updated traffic study for Dakota Pacific, which still wants to develop the tech center area there at Kimball Junction. So is it the council will be doing its own traffic study or just verifying the results of the Dakota Pacific traffic study using a third party?
It's going to be a peer review of that study. So I assume that the way that will work is that the peer organization, which we've asked to be completely independent of Dakota Pacific and any of its affiliates, that they come in and do an assessment of traffic and see if the assessment that we receive is accurate.
It sounded like that's going to be difficult because apparently Dakota Pacific has lots of tentacles and is involved with many other issues here. So do you have to go out of state?
Possibly, yeah. I think they, you know, they do a lot of business here. I believe they do business in California, but Pat Putt seems to be confident that he'll be able to find a company that can comply with that.
Okay, and it sounds like it cost the county some $12,000 to $15,000 to do this. Why is it our cost? They're the developers. Shouldn't that be absorbed by them?
Yeah, you can probably call it the Roger Armstrong paranoia fee. Every time we get a traffic study, it feels like, you know, feels like there's not a lot of certainty in it. And when I look at them, I kind of shake my head and wonder where they got the data. For example, the roundabout over by Home Depot and the gas station. When the Silver Creek Village approval was done, we were assured in that traffic study that it was that the roundabout that existed there was going to be more than enough to handle traffic. And now we hear that it's incredibly busy and there are conversations about having to expand that roundabout already and add roundabouts potentially to the on-ramp getting on Highway 40.
Yeah, we heard about that years ago. It just hasn't happened, right?
Exactly.
You spent a lot of time on the moderate income housing plan before postponing a vote until September 19th's meeting. It sounds like there were a lot of sticking points to resolve, but you had mentioned that Representative Kara Berkland has filed a bill to repeal a portion of this bill that's requiring this. I mean, what do you know about her effort, and is there a chance of passing it?
I haven't had an update, and I don't know if she's filed it yet. I believe she said she was preparing it, and in someplace in the deep recesses of my mind, I think she said she filed it, but she intends to. I think we were hopeful that there might be a special session where that could be brought up, but it's unclear what will or will not happen to that. So we're going to have to proceed with the HTRZ as directed, I guess. It's not due until the end of the year. And part of that discussion that we had, I don't know that there were a lot of issues to resolve, but I think the one most important issue to resolve is whether to include this HTRZ in the general plan, in this modified moderate income housing plan. I would kind of prefer to leave it out. The county attorney's office told us last night that it is a requirement of this moderate income housing plan. I think I'm comfortable allowing it to stay in because A, it doesn't exist right now, and B, once we come up with whatever that plan looks like, how and when we implement it will be part of the discussion. But there are opportunities, I think, even in that HTRZ, for us to get deep into the weeds and see if we can make something that started incredibly ugly work for us in some way.
Okay. A lot of the conversation centered on AMI and how even with moderately affordable housing, emergency service workers, even doctors can't find a place they can afford to live in. You called it an abnormal cost of living and said it's a difficult situation that's grown worse over the last 3 years. So how do we measure what sort of economic impact all of these unfilled jobs are having on Summit County?
You know, anecdotally, we know that they're having a significant impact, and we're going to see it soon, I think, with the county manager hire that we're looking at. We're going to have to figure that out. Tom Fisher, when he left, said you're probably going to have a conversation about housing, and we've had other employees in the county that we've had to have those conversations about. We've had to compromise in some cases and allow county employees who would otherwise be required to live in Summit County to live outside of Summit County. And I don't think we want that. We heard in the Park City, the joint meeting that we had with Park City, that police, fire, and sheriff departments in Summit County have about a third of their workforce that are able to live here. And I think in the case of Park City Fire, they have a firefighter driving from as far as Manti. My belief is we've sort of always had this affordable housing discussion as affordable housing being a monolithic one flavor concept. Just build a lot of it and we'll figure out who goes in it as long as they work in Summit County and as long as they meet certain economic qualifications. I think we have to go a little bit further. If we're using county government resources to either incentivize this housing through density or actually putting money or property that we've purchased on behalf of the public as part of the equation for affordable housing, who are we building it for? Should we be building housing for the resorts, or should the resorts take that burden on? They do. There's a 125-bed facility in Vail that houses critical workers that might not be able to get in because of blizzard conditions on I-70, and it seems to work pretty well with them. You have to requalify as a critical worker every year. The resorts can find formulas to help solve that, or they can come to us with public-private partnership proposals that we might be able to talk about. But I don't think that, I think that we have to start being more strategic about how we create this housing, who we create it for, and as important, where we locate it, what part of the county we locate it in. If we want to house county workers, should we put county worker housing for county workers in Colville and Francis and say, there you go. It's just commuting, it's more gas, it's inconvenient. It's a much more nuanced conversation, I think, than we've ever had about affordable housing. And that includes seniors, and as Melina said last night, you know, our at-risk populations, our underserved populations that deserve some consideration as well.
Okay. Anything else from the meeting that you wanted to mention before we let you go?
You know, I just always like to, when somebody has been with us and retires, I think it deserves a mention. And yesterday, Boyd Willoughby, who has been a key and very critical employee for the landfill for the last 15, almost 16 years, is retiring. And, you know, we always wish people well when they do that. But we're a service business. When we have people that provide excellent customer service to the residents of Summit County, we really do miss them. And so we wish Boyd and his family well in his retirement and thank him for everything that he did for us.
Okay. Roger, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, as we've reported, the homegrown company, Ski Butlers, founded back in 2003, has been acquired by Alterra Mountain Company, that ski rental and delivery service that the New York Times has said is the best way to travel without your skis, is now in the studio to talk about the sale. And what is next is the CEO, I believe, and the founder of the company, Bryn Carey. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so you started it in 2003?
2004. Mm-hmm. I was graduating from the University of New Hampshire and came up with the idea with my dad and began working on it about May of 2004. And we started right up the street from here on 125 Daly Ave, actually.
So when I texted you after the announcement, I asked, do you get to retire now? Is that the case?
that is a very popular question right now. And of course not. I'm pretty young and want to keep my brain busy and keep working. And fortunately, with this deal, I like to stay on with Alterra and run Ski Butler. So I'm incredibly excited about that.
Okay, so are you now like COO? Is that how it works? Or
The way it's going to be set up is Ski Butlers is going to be a standalone company within Alterra. So we kept all of our team members. We'll probably only be gaining team members and the same leadership team. So I'll be CEO of Ski Butlers, and we'll be able to use Alterra's resources to help grow.
Yeah. So the sale has closed. I mean, it's a done deal.
It's a done deal. A week ago today, it closed.
So what is it that you're obligated to Altera now? I mean, running the company, but indefinitely, or?
I mean, my goal with this transition is, if I was going to sell Ski Butlers, I wanted to go to a company that I could work for forever. And so, my goal is to stick around and try to reach some pretty big goals and, bring our culture and continue to deliver service to more and more customers and get more team members. So, yeah, I'm staying on. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, so I guess the biggest question is why. I mean, you've got a successful business. You've used the company specifically to raise the platform of climate change. And I guess why give that up to be now an employee?
Well, timing is everything in life. And I was never running Ski Butlers to sell it. I was always running it to enjoy the day-to-day, to make an impact on the world, to have fun, to live my lifestyle and my team members to be able to live their lifestyle, right? But when Altera approached me, over the course of time, it just seemed like it was the perfect timing to do this and become, a part of a company where, our vision is to be in every major ski destination in the world. And this allows us to continue that growth and get into more locations and service more customers. So it was a good fit culture-wise, service-wise. And a challenge for someone like myself who's very competitive.
Yeah, so allows you to expand given now that you kind of got the capitalization of Altera behind you?
Yeah, exactly. I think all of our current locations will grow with Altera behind us, but also, of course, we're going to expand into new locations as well.
Okay, so they did approach you. You weren't looking to sell.
Altera approached me, and, over the course of time, we built that relationship. I think that's important. For me, is I was never just going to pass this on to someone random and walk away. Like, that's not, those aren't my values. And so we were really able to line up our values together.
Yeah. How long did that transaction then take to, from approach to, last week?
almost a year. Yeah, almost a year.
So talk a little bit about your employees. I mean, how many are we talking about when you're located at 50 resorts in North America and Europe?
Well, it's always a tough question to answer. In the off season, we go down to 10 to 15 team members, and right now we start ramping up. So we'll have probably over 250 at peak season this winter across the company. It's becoming a pretty big company.
Yeah. So just the 10, 15 are year round, full time.
Year round, full time, and and people always ask me, what do you do in the summer? It's always hard to explain, but we're always getting ready. For the winter, with so many locations, our time gets filled up pretty quickly.
Yeah, so will you be doing a lot of traveling, looking at the different resorts now and then reporting back to Altera? Or?
Yeah, I mean, between me, Jake, and Mike, our leadership team, we will be traveling a fair amount, not only to start to integrate with Altera, but also to be there for our team members and help with the transition and be there for questions. It's always one of my favorite part of the jobs is being able to go visit Big Sky or Aspen or Palisades and Tahoe and get to see the community, see their challenges, and get to meet the team members. So we'll continue that, and we'll probably add a little extra time to meet with the folks at the ski resorts as well.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about your platform of client change. I mean, is Altera obligated by the sales in any way to kind of continue elevating that?
Well, as I was a part of Mountain Towns 2030, and that was the first time we got all the major ski resorts on the stage at once together, Boyne, Powder, Altera, and Vail. And since then, they've all been working together to address climate change. I mean, everyone knows that it's a problem, especially for ski resorts and ski towns in the Mountain West. And I believe this is actually going to provide a bigger platform over time for me to make a difference. I know that Altera is starting to dive in deeper and to be a part of the solution around climate change. We are bringing over, we're climate neutral. We're going to continue to do that. We're certified climate neutral. So we're going to continue to do that and try to lower our emissions. We're hoping that we can actually be the part of the conversation with the rest of the company to also help them, and they can help us. So I think it's going to be a good thing. But that passion of mine is still right here.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about just how you feel like you have been directly impacted by climate change.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the uncertainty. A little bit more. We're starting to see here more in Park City, but definitely in our Tahoe market. Thanksgiving has been a little bit more challenging, of course. We don't know how much snow we're going to have. And March is becoming warmer. And so I think the beginning and end of the season, are you can feel that shrinking in a little bit on us. So we got to do everything in our power to stop that from happening.
Yeah, so they are on board with you. I mean, was that a big part of the negotiation, though? Or did it even get brought up?
No, you know, I think a big part of me selling ski bottlers is things that I'm passionate about, right? And part of it was, is our service going to be, are we going to have an NPS of 95%, how we measure customer service? And that was the biggest alignment. Is our culture going to stay? Are we going to have our own culture? Well, that's why we've been successful, and we're going to keep that culture and hopefully be able to provide more resources and benefits to our team members. We check that box. And also climate change, that, hey, you know, Ski Butlers is a leader here. I'm a voice with climate change. We need to keep pushing this. And like, we actually, Bryn, keep doing that and help us. And we actually work with one of the same consultant on some climate change stuff. So there's already some synergy there.
Yeah. So are you headed to the MT 2030 conference next week in Breckenridge?
I was planning on it. Unfortunately, with this transaction, I'm not going. We're still a sponsor. Our team members on the ground in Breck are helping out. One of our marketing folks from Park City is going. So we're going to still be involved and still support MT 2030. It's just that those particular dates, I have to be somewhere else. So.
Okay. Well, so does this give you back kind of a 9-to-5 life, or not really?
As an entrepreneur, small business owner, and leader, you know, I think it's a balance. I have a busy mind. I work hard, and I may be out of the office, but I'm always thinking. And so I think right now I have a big challenge of integrating Ski Butlers into Alterra, and that might be more work for the short term. But, I try to have a balance. And maybe there is a little bit less pressure, but I always put pressure on myself. I'm competitive. I like to try to do a really good job, and I like to lead my team to think big and go bigger than they ever thought possible. So I don't know. Well, time will tell on that one.
Yeah. So what is the success of this business? It's just not having to carry your skis and boots and, you know?
Well, it's funny, because I went back and thanked a lot of people that have helped Ski Butlers along the way, because it is such a team effort. And even the idea was my dad. Someone came up with the name of Ski Butlers. It wasn't me. I've just been the one person here the whole time, but there have been so many other people that have been influential. But the idea of making renting skis easy and convenient, it's the same today. I mean, our idea, our technologies changes, our systems and processes change to make everything better. But the idea is the same as it was 18 years ago. And a ski vacation might be more challenging now. So I think our service is in even more of a need than it was back in 2004.
And I guess, why is it easier to go through you as opposed to just getting my skis up at the resort? It's a little bit closer.
Well, sometimes it just depends on where you're staying. If you're close to the resort, then you know what? It might be just as easy to go use the resort shop. If you're staying ski in and ski out, it's probably easier to have it delivered. It is nice sitting in your condo or hotel or wherever you might be, maybe having a glass of wine by the fire with a ski butler fitting your boots and answering questions about your ski vacation. That is hard to beat.
Yeah. And so for the customer, going forward, seamless? I mean, will they even know that this has happened?
The goal is they don't know what happens. Hopefully at Alterra-owned resorts, we can provide a little bit more integration and better service. And so hopefully it only enhances it. But no, I mean, Ski Butlers, we're gonna make someone's vacation and renting skis the best it can possibly be. I mean, that's what we're going to stick with. That's what's made us successful. That's why Alterra wanted us, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
No, just thank you for the community, and thank you for everyone that's helped us along the way. It is so appreciative and very fortunate to be here. So thank you for having me on, and look forward to the next phase of Ski Butlers.
All right. Well, congratulations on the sale.
Thank you.
It's Bryn Carey again, now the founder and former CEO of Ski Butlers, now has sold to Alterra Mountain Company. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:47. 8:47 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Christian Center of Park City welcoming back its Hike for Hunger this weekend. On the phone with details, Executive Director Rob Harder. Good morning, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Leslie.
Okay, so this is going to be held Saturday, 2 to 6 p.m. at a new location at the Canyons Village. Why the change?
Yeah, you know what? Deer Valley was unable to accommodate us this year, and so we reached out to Vail Resorts, and Vail Resorts Epic Promise said, absolutely, let's host you, and so we're super excited to be able at the Canyons Resort, and actually there's all kinds of different activities we're going to be there, so it should be great.
Okay, we'll talk about those in just a minute. So this is happening, rain or shine, because we do have some rain showers in the forecast for Saturday.
I know. It depends on, I guess, I've seen a couple that looks like it's clearing. So it depends where you look. But, yes, it's going to be rain or shine. We're certainly hoping for a nice, beautiful day. But either way, we're going to have a great day at the mountain because there's going to be the ability to do some things inside if we have to or covered. So we just say come rain or shine, but we're hoping for sure that it's going to clear and it's going to be just gorgeous.
Okay. Well, tell us what happens at Hike for Hunger.
Yeah, so again, this is good to be on the radio just to let everybody know because they're so used to going to Deer Valley. So we'll be at the Canyon Resort. So you want to do is just go right to the base of the Cabriolet Lift, which is right across from the 7-Eleven if you've skied at the Canyons Resort, Park City. And just check in there. So Vail Resorts, again, has been so gracious. We'll be able to use the Cabriolet. It's all included. So you park there. You get on the Cabriolet. You come to the top of where the gondola starts, essentially. And there's the band shell there. That's where a lot of the activity is going to be. We've got a lot of partners there. We've got ice cream and espresso. We've got all kinds of different activities right there. Live music will be starting there, the food, the wine, the drinks. And then the hike itself, actually, you'll get on the gondola. That'll be part of your registration fee. So you jump on the gondola there. It takes you up to the top of Red Pine Lodge. And that's where two of the hikes are going to start. And so there will also be some food and drinks at the top. So it should be, again, lots of different opportunities. Some people in the past, and you could do it again this time, may just want to take the Cabriolet and take the gondola and then come back down. You know, maybe you don't even hike. You just want to enjoy the beautiful weather and be outside. So there's lots of different options.
Okay. And is it like per person? Are you doing kind of a family price as well?
We are, yep. So we want to keep it super, super cheap so people can come in and $39 per person, $59 per couple or family. So if you're two or you have more than one person, basically you can get the entire family in for $59. And we also just say, if you can't afford to come, come anyway. That's okay. We're not going to keep anyone back. So just come and join. We want this to be a really wonderful celebration and community event.
Okay. And as you mentioned, a lot of other stuff going on. Can you talk about some of that? Besides the hike?
Yeah, so the fun thing is we've got this group like Sir Urban Sailor is going to be offering this wonderful espresso and coffee drinks. We have Lori Tolbert has got this special gelato, this really special ice cream. Some people may have seen her in the farmer's market in Salt Lake. She does a lot of things around the Salt Lake area. She's going to come up. We do have face painting. We've got live music. Mountain Town Music is going to be there and run with Smiling Souls, which is a reggae band. So there'll be some great music. There's lawn games. Again, there's food and drink and wine at the Umbrella Bar. If you're familiar with the Canyons Resort, again, they're going to let us use that space, which is really nice. And then, of course, the hiking itself. And then, again, like a lot of community partners, Jewish Family Services, People's Health Clinic. We've got Community Action. We've got a lot of different community partners and other nonprofits that will have booths and tables there, letting people know about their organization and their wonderful services. So just kind of, again, our goal is really to create this as a community event.
Yeah, so all of the money raised goes to support the food bank. How?
Yeah, so basically, yeah, all the money that comes in is going to apply right to our food pantry. So we have designated gifts. So it'll go to food pantry here in Park City and in Heber. A lot of people know that we serve a lot of people, and it's growing. We've seen a 22% increase in the last 3 months of people needing our food pantry. And also with the launch of school, we've had this program called Snacks and Backpacks, and that's actually launched again. And we've expanded it now to North and South Summit School District, and we've gotten it even bigger in Heber. So all those programs cost money, obviously, to run, and so all this money will be able to support those programs.
That's a huge increase, 22% in just 3 months. What do you attribute that to?
Yeah. You know, Leslie, I think it's the inflation. I think it's the price of everything, you know, from rent to food to gas. Everything is more expensive. And so we're just seeing more people come. And I've mentioned it before, but our food pantry managers have mentioned to me, not only are more people coming, But when they come, they fill their cart with a lot more food. And so it just tells me they need a lot more to make ends meet. Now, we help with rent assistance, as you know, too. But we have a limited dollar amount to help with that. And sometimes you're seeing 10, 15, 20% or more in rent increases. And so we have encouraged people, hey, food is something that can save your family budget or individual budget a lot of money. So get as much food as you can from our food pantry and save that money you have for your rent or your utility bill or water bill or whatever else you have. So that's the best I can say, is that everything is costing so much more.
Yeah, at the same time, the food suppliers are also paying more for the food. Are they able to be as generous as they have been?
Boy, that's a really good point. No, well, they're always generous, but with what they have. But we're getting less food from the grocery stores right now, because I think you're right. They're buying less because it's more expensive. So they're cutting their margins, which is smart, but therefore we have less to get from them. Many people know that Monday through Saturday, we pick up from all the area grocery stores, both in Park City and in Heber. We just have less food that they're giving to us. And so many people have maybe heard or seen our emails. We're definitely asking for some more support. And Hike for Hunger is a great part of that, is to make sure that we get more food. And we're going to have to actually, we rarely purchase food. We did during COVID because we needed to, but this is another time where we're going to supplement, because we're just not getting enough consistent food from the grocery stores for that very reason. So yes, we do want to get the word out that there's more people that need food and there's less food available at this point. So we're definitely trying to mind that gap.
Okay. Let's see. People can just register online at ccfpc.org.
Exactly. Super simple. Go to our website. The first picture you'll see is the Hike for Hunger. Click on that, and it'll take you to the registration page. Super easy process. And like I said, we don't want anyone not to come if they can't afford it. So show up. We'll be there Saturday. It'll start at 2 p.m., as you mentioned, and should be a great time. Can't wait to see you there.
Okay. What else you got going on? Anything?
You know what? That's the main thing right now. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot of things with our counseling still growing and expanding, and we'll have some programs we'll maybe next month we'll talk about. And then we just finished up a very successful Back to School Basics. Of course, that was a great event. Thank you, community, for supporting that. And like I said, Snacks and Backpacks, that's been growing. So we're really now gearing up. The next big event will be Operation Hope and our Winter Coat Drive. We do that now. We've done that the last 12 years as well. And we try to get every kid in Park City and Heber a new winter coat, and then that sets them up for signing up for Operation Hope, which is our Christmas program. And again, we'll have more time to talk about that, but that's kind of the next thing on the wings of Hike for Hunger, so we're gearing up for that as well.
Okay, Rob, thank you for your time this morning. Good luck this weekend.
Hey, thank you so much, Leslie.
It's Rob Harder, the Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:55. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as summer draws to a close, so does the lawn watering season. Heber Valley water officials say to expect sprinklers to run dry sometime this month or early next. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has more.
Thursday is when Midway Irrigation Company was planning to shut off irrigation water. The company now says it'll keep it flowing for weeks to come until it runs out or the weather starts to freeze. Pressure may become lower, though, according to Mike Kohler, the Midway Irrigation Director, who's also a state representative for Wasatch County and Park City. Midway officials weren't as confident the season would last late back in July. Then, Kohler and Midway Mayor Celeste Johnson said city water supply was critically low and asked users to cut back. Midway is one of many irrigation companies in the Heber Valley. Most of the others get water from the Central Utah Water Conservancy District and tend to end delivery at the same time. Central Utah Water Heber Valley Area Manager Roger Pearson says most Heber City residents could stop receiving water as soon as a couple weeks from now. But that's up to the Provo River Water Commissioner, who hasn't made the call yet.
Generally, he watches the forecast, and if it's cold and wet, there's a chance he could call the irrigation season. If it's hot and dry, he'll typically extend it. Just based on need and water availability.
The end of irrigation water delivery doesn't impact culinary water, which is what flows through people's homes. In September, according to Pearson, water companies sometimes shut off irrigation to conserve it when there's already sufficient moisture in the ground.
It's nice carrying a little water over to use, you know, kind of as money in the bank for next year, just in case we have a bad hot summer.
He says when his office gets word that irrigation water is turning off, it'll work with local cities and special service districts to get the word out to residents. The only cutoff date that's already set is for Wasatch Irrigation Company share owners whose water comes from a flood ditch. They'll stop receiving delivery on Sunday, September 25th. Companies like Midway Irrigation, Lake Creek Irrigation, Daniel Irrigation, and Center Creek Irrigation don't need to follow Central Utah Water's last day because their water comes from other places. Pearson recommends people call their specific water providers for more information. He also thanks Heber Valley residents for being efficient with water use this year. He attributes the continued water availability this late in the summer to their low usage and several timely rainstorms. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:58. Well, Park City is holding a wildfire evacuation exercise later this month. Residents who want to be part of it, though, need to register by today. The full-scale wildfire evacuation exercise will be held Wednesday, September 28th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The city was originally planning the exercise for last year. That ended up being delayed after the very real Parley's Canyon fire forced the evacuation of thousands of residents in Summit Park and Pinebrook. The exercise on the 28th will begin in Lower Deer Valley, where residents will be routed to designated evacuation points outside the city. The city is encouraging residents to participate. Again, pre-registration and a signed waiver are required by today. A link can be found online at kpcw.org or go to beReadyParkCity.org.